This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. We've been checking in with mayors across the state this week. Want to get a feel for what it's like to have public responsibility to people who are mostly your neighbors. Mayors are the ones on the ground making sure the water's running, the trash is collected, even in a pandemic. We've heard from the mayor of Elizabeth City out on the coast, the mayor of Andrews up in the mountains, and today we turn to the mayor of North Carolina's sixth largest city. It hosts a mosque named after Omar ibn Said, as well as the oldest Civil War monument in the state, not to mention an 80-foot replica of the Eiffel Tower. It sits along the Cape Fear River, borders the largest military base in the world by population, Fort Bragg. Mitch Colvin is the mayor of Fayetteville, North Carolina. Mitch, welcome to the State of Things.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing well, sir.
You are, your full-time work is as a funeral director. Describe what it has been like balancing these two jobs as mayor and funeral director.
Well, you don't have a lot of free time, that's for sure, but I love what I do. They have a lot of similarities with interaction with people, and you get to know some great people, and so that's why it was a good fit to do public service.
What are some of the difficult conversations you're having with community members right now?
Well, you know, people were anxious. They were uncertain. They economically were threatened by the fact of layoffs or furloughs or businesses going under, as well as the public health portion of it. And as you know, we haven't experienced a pandemic in 100 years, and a lot of people just don't know, really didn't know what it meant. But we fared pretty well. Our citizens have reacted wonderfully. And we're very fortunate at this time compared to many other jurisdictions.
Yeah, I wonder what it's like for you as a mayor. As we suggested, you're the people on the ground. You hear from folks more often. You're likely to know a larger percentage of your constituency than people who have different offices. And yet you're not in a position to do a heck of a lot about a pandemic or economic recovery or all of those sort of things. What do you tell people when they start to express these kinds of anxieties to you?
Well, we try to communicate often and give them as much information as we have, as quick as we get it. You know, I had a great call with the governor. We've got a open line of communication on a state level to let them know the kinds of things that the state of North Carolina is doing for the pandemic. As you said, these are people that we go to church with, grocery store with, and so you're the first person that they call when they have questions. And so we just try to make sure that they're well-informed and implement those recommendations that are coming down from the federal and state level.
Now, you did take action on your own. That was not something every mayor did. You imposed a curfew. I think it expires today, right?
Yes, sir, that's correct. I thought that the governor's order gave us a basic framework. It allowed the ability to make some local actions more restrictive. A lot of jurisdictions did stay-at-home orders. I felt that there was a specific need to discourage people from those social activities that happen after work hours between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. And so, you know, during that time, you have a lot of people doing social gatherings and cookouts and house parties and those kinds of things, which increased the likelihood that the virus would be spread. And so we're seeing I think the benefits of making those type of moves and decisions per capita, we have about 1 in 1,000 persons that are impacted with the virus, whereas many of our municipal peers have 1 in 500, 1 in 600. So we don't know that the curfew did it alone, but we think that it was a good complement to what the governor has done.
So you're still feeling good about that decision?
I am. A lot of people have, you know, expressed their concerns about the government being overreaching and interacting. Mm-hmm. But I just erred on the side of caution, and I'll take that decision and make it again if necessary. So I think if we save one life, we've served our purpose with it.
Talk about the community where you grew up, Murchison Road, and that community. I know that's something that has been near and dear to you and a community that you've always seen great potential in. Tell us about that community and your sense of hope for that community.
It's a great community. It's predominantly African American. It has its challenges, its social economic differences, but it's a wonderful community. It's home of Fayetteville State University, and I grew up there. And you have some great people who need opportunities, and so that was the motivation for me to run for city council, to try to bring resources into that area and kind of turn those things around. And as this COVID experience has done nationally, communities of socially economically challenged have a greater sense of vulnerability to this virus because of health care and because of the poverty rates and education. So we've been very fortunate, but we've been very careful with communicating and asking them to cooperate with the government.
Let's talk more about those disparities, racial disparities in wages and in health. Where race is recorded, two-thirds of the confirmed cases in Cumberland County are Black or African-American individuals, where you're looking at a county with 40% Black population. And I'm wondering about sort of going forward, because this is not the last pandemic and not the last time we're going to have to face a challenge like this. How would you go get prepared, prepare now for the next one to try to reduce or eliminate these disparities?
Well, that's a great question. Hopefully, after the things calm down a bit, I've developed a great relationship with the leader of our healthcare system, Mike Nagowski, who's the CEO of Cape Fear Hospital, also our public health director. And so even though cities are not necessarily tasked with public health and human service, we have worked well together along with the county commission during this time. And I think after this, I think this tells us that we need to probably form some type of ongoing task force to prepare in the event that we have another outbreak of some kind, which is probably inevitable. And so this has been something that we haven't really tracked, and there wasn't a lot of precedent. But I think that now out of this, we'll review this with an after-action plan, and hopefully we'll have something ongoing.
Well, I'm wondering what you're looking at, too, because obviously there are preparations for the immediate need, more hospital rooms, more ventilators, you know, better protective equipment, having the capacity to make that more quickly. All of those things you can imagine for the immediate need. But when we're talking about racial disparities, wealth disparities, these are much broader in their scope and in the kinds of solutions that you'd need to apply. Can you see going forward making an appeal back to this pandemic and saying we must address these problems of wealth inequity and educational inequity in our communities?
Absolutely. That's the foundation to all of it. I think a rising tide lifts all boats. So I've advocated here locally that we raise our salaries and wages and the amount of benefits that are available by our companies. And so I have also championed with the governor to try to get expansion in Medicaid and so that more American and more citizens of North Carolina, in particular Fayetteville, can have health insurance so that they don't have these chronic problems that make them vulnerable to this. And so I think there is certainly a larger discussion that has to happen. But I would pray that the legislator sees that the vulnerability of our state and our economies are tied to people's health and well-being. And hopefully they will make the decisions they need to make to expand Medicaid in this state.
You know, Fayetteville's in a unique position, I don't have to tell you. It's a city located in essentially a rural area all around it. A lot of movement between those two zones, between the rural and the city area. People moving out for the jobs, people coming in for shopping and everything else. There's a Smithfield meat processing plant with dozens of cases. It's 30 minutes from downtown Fayetteville. What is managing public health? What's that look like when you're faced with problems again outside of your region?
That's a great point. I mean, we have to be very proactive in making sure that some of those problems that impact those areas are not impacting Fayetteville and our economy, as well as our social activities are intertwined. This is kind of the hub for a 9-county area for people to come in and do their transactions or to have spend time. And so we've got to be very thoughtful in the type of things that we put in place to mitigate that. And that's a conversation I plan to have with our local city council, as well as bring this to the attention of our county commissioners, that what are the things we can do from a public policy perspective that will help mitigate that. And that's the kind of thing that I think that task force or that group can work on ongoing.
Let's talk a little bit about how you came to be mayor and own a funeral home. What was it like growing up for you in Fayetteville? You were a little bit on the wild side, I understand, just from some accounts. Early on, you were not as focused as you appear to be now. Is that fair?
That's a fair statement. You know, certainly growing up as a youth, I grew up in an area, as we say, Murchison Road, that had its challenges with the things that often plagued many of our communities with crime and some of the things. And so I walked off track a few times, but I think that's made me a better person. So I have an appreciation and an empathy for people who are in that situation now. I can offer them some real valuable advice as to how you can change things around in your life. And it's been a blessing to me. I had strong parents who taught a good work ethic, and they were very faith-driven people. And I think that, you know, as the Bible said, that train up a child in the right way, and even though he may step out of line, he'll eventually get back to it. And that's my testimony. And so I advocate and champion for that, and as transparent as you can get with telling and being real with that with the people I talk to.
You got into a minor scrape, and that has led you to an initiative about expunging records, especially for young people who have, again, minor scrapes with the law. Tell us about that.
Yes, sir. So I was a youth at 16, 17 years old. I was driving my parents' car. Had some of my friends or who appeared to be friends at the time with me in the vehicle, and we were pulled over. And of course, because I was the operator of the vehicle, I was charged. But thankfully, a magistrate went beyond and did his job and researched one of the items that was found. Actually would have presented a felony if I would have been charged with that. But he actually saw that that case had been tried and disposed prior to the incident. And so I missed becoming a felon by the skin of my teeth, and because a public official chose to look a little further. And so I'm sympathetic to that, because that would have changed the entire trajectory of where I am today. And I want to make sure that people are given second chances in this community. And I've worked with a county commissioner who happens to be a felon who has turned his life around. I worked with our district attorney, and we've expunged over 1,000 records in Cumberland County, and giving people a second opportunity to life.
What else was it? Was it that moment, or what else happened along the way that got you really focused on your community and then ultimately becoming mayor?
Well, that was the epiphany for me. I mean, I had had some little minor incidents as a youth, you know, prior to it really sticking. But that incident at that moment told me that this is something that you cannot continue to play with, and at some point, it's going to cost you. And so at that point, I made up my mind that that was not a route I needed to take. I went off to college to learn my craft as a funeral director. That was probably one of the best moves I've ever made, because it took me out of a situation that I was in and allowed me a fresh start, and came back and started a career. And it's yielded me to where I am now. And so I think that I'm obligated to tell that story to help as many people as we can who are in that situation.
Talking to Mitch Colvin, who is the mayor of Fayetteville, North Carolina, and we're going to continue our North Carolina Mayor Series on Wednesday. We're going to talk to Durham Mayor Steve Shule. If you have a mayor that you want to hear from, you can nominate them on Twitter with the hashtag NCMayors. Mitch Colvin, the funeral business, were your parents in that business, or did you start that yourself?
No, my parents started the first location in 1971, and then I've operated for the last 21 years and have added two other locations.
When you were in high school, I mean, again, was this one grand moment for you, the epiphany, and then deciding that you would take your parents to the funeral business? Or, you know, had you always thought, well, one day I will, or never will I?
Yeah, I was in the never will category.
Okay.
I remember having that conversation and told my parents emphatically that you may as well have other plans, because I certainly do not plan to do this. I had to work in it as a kid growing up. But you never say never. And what I will say is that I thank my mother. My father's deceased now, but I thank my mother for giving me an ultimatum at graduation point to say either you're going in the military or you're going to school. You make your choice. And so I chose to go to school, and that worked out well.
You took over that business when you were 21, right?
Yes, sir. 21, I came back, and our business was going through some turbulent times. And I had to grow up fast. And over the last 20 years, had a lot of bumps and bruises along the way. But I think I've turned out okay.
Well, you know, it also gives you an opportunity, and especially at a time like this, to talk with people in their most intimate and most vulnerable moments. And I'm wondering, you know, what those conversations and insights have given you that others may not, because they're not with people who are grieving in the same way that you're able to do. What kind of insights that's given you?
Well, it's given me a unique perspective for sure. You know, I sit with grieving mothers whose kids have been gunned down because of gun violence in our cities, and a lot of times that we're detached. And so as a public policy maker, I advocate for things that will increase the safety in our community. With this COVID situation, I'm meeting families on a daily basis who've lost family members unexpectedly because of this situation, and it gives me a better appreciation as to what their point of view is. And so I think that all of this serves as to who I am and the things that I'm passionate about, and I continue to try to take that into the room every time when it's time to make a public policy decision.
You know, yesterday we heard from some high school seniors and school staff from Cumberland County. What are you hearing from young people?
I had a Zoom call today with the civics class at Reed Ross Classical High School, a class of 11th and 12th graders. They are appreciative of it. It's a different time, and they said that they're getting used to the teleconferencing. Many of them said that they now miss going to the classroom, ironically. They appreciated the break, but they're ready for things to return to normal. But they, too, had to make a serious adjustment. You know, I did a message to our graduating seniors who worked for so many years to prepare for this day, who now have to have a graduation that they never thought would be the case. And so wanted to encourage them during this time and let them know that they're still to be celebrated and the community standing with them. So young people are adjusting. They're very resilient, and they were overall very appreciative of the information that we're putting out to them.
What do you miss most about Fayetteville this time of year, not being able to appreciate the city as you might otherwise?
Typically, Dogwood Festival is a big part of what we do. That would have occurred a few weeks ago, and we had to cancel that as kind of our flagship event. We had a lot of outdoor activities planned for festivals and things to take place in the street in downtown area. We have a world-class baseball team that had a very successful year. So all of those kinds of things that encourage large public gatherings have been taken off the table, and I certainly miss that part of life.
Mitch Colvin is the mayor of Fayetteville. Mitch, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.